It's 8:01. This is KVNF Regional News for Tuesday, March 31st. I'm Patricia Naft. State lawmakers on the Senate Appropriations Committee have moved forward a measure that would use a portion of severance tax money slated for energy impacts in local communities to balance the budget. But as Benta Berkland reports, the proposal still faces strong opposition.
Senate Bill 255 would redirect $20 million from the severance tax fund to pay refunds to taxpayers under the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. For the first time in a decade, Colorado owes refunds because of high revenue growth. Democratic Senator Pat Stebman of Denver says oil and gas drilling brought in more money, so it makes sense to help pay for it.
And you have to acknowledge, I think, that it plays some role in the fact the state owes a Tabor refund of the magnitude that we do.
But local communities say they need that money to pay for energy impacts and ongoing water and infrastructure projects. They note that the state raided the fund during the recession to the tune of nearly $300 million. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
The regulatory sparring between DMEA and Tri-State continues. KVNF's Jake Ryan has more.
The Delta Montrose Electrical Association wants to buy power from a proposed hydroelectric plant, but their contract with Tri-State won't let them. So they're petitioning the federal government for some clarifications that would allow it to work around their contract and buy the power anyways. Unsurprisingly, Tri-State recently sent a letter to the agency detailing why they're right and why DMEA is wrong. Here's Lee Bowie, a senior manager for telecommunications with Tri-State.
Well, all 44 of Tri-State's members agreed to buy 95% of their power from Tri-State. That arrangement makes it possible for Tri-State to finance generation and transmission services at a lower cost. That lower cost is passed on to all 44 members. If any member of Tri-State seeks to buy less than 95% of its power from Tri-State, it'll raise costs to all 44 members, and that violates both the spirit and the letter of the cooperative model. DMEA's petition is an attempt to avoid honoring its contract with Tri-State and the other 43 cooperatives who make up the association.
Jeff Hurd is an attorney for DMEA. He says the issue is bigger than just the contract.
There's actually a federal law that's involved here, PURPA, the Public Utilities Regulatory Policies Act, and parties can certainly contract to certain things, but if it violates or contravenes federal law, then you're not going to be able to do it. And the example that I would give is we can have a subdivision where we decide contractually to set the speed limit at 60 miles an hour, but state law or whatever might have a different opinion, and it says we can only set the speed limit at 20 miles an hour. And in the same way, Tri-State, I understand, is arguing that it has the contractual right to connect with this particular hydro facility. But the fact of the matter is federal law says that it's up to the facility itself to decide who it wants to connect with. And in this case, the facility wants to connect with DMEA, not with Tri-State.
Bowie says that Tri-State has reached out to buy from the hydro plant themselves at their rate, but Hurd says that with that pricing, it wouldn't be economically worth it for DMEA or the hydro plant. Hurd also says that the federal law he mentioned didn't leave too much room for interpretation. They hope to hear back from the federal agency next month. For KVNF, I'm Jake Ryan.
A new art show in Paonia seeks to challenge the way people think about individuals with disabilities. KVNF's Laura Pomisano attended the opening reception for the show and filed this report.
It's Friday evening in Paonia, and the Blue Sage Gallery is open late for its new art exhibit.
The show is for people that have disabilities.
That's Sonny Seto. Her work is in the show.
And it is called Normal is a Drier Setting, because normal is different for everybody. Autism would be my normal.
For Sonny, relating to others is a challenge. That's why she draws.
Art is mostly how I prefer to communicate my ideas about things that are important to me.
Rhoda Yeago, another featured artist, suffered a traumatic brain injury as a child. It affects her ability to speak. Rhoda likes to trace, draw, and use a lot of color in her art.
What work do you have here tonight?
Lion, painting, and then butterfly, and Bambi, and then Mickey, no.
Carter Keegan is a photographer.
The work I have displayed, mainly it focuses on the natural world of animals and humans with animals, bringing that human-animal connection together.
Sonny says the art exhibit isn't about showcasing disabilities. It's about highlighting the skills of the artists.
Showing that we do have talent and that we do have something to offer to the community expressed through our artwork. The only true disability, in my opinion, is society failing to recognize the abilities that disabled people have and give.
The show runs through April 4th at the Blue Sage Gallery. For KVNF, I'm Laura Palmisano.
To see images from this event, visit our website at kvnf.org. Reducing the number of standardized tests Colorado school children take has been a top priority for lawmakers in both parties and the governor this legislative session. But so far, there have been roadblocks. As part of our Capital Conversation series, Benta Berkland analyzes the debate.
Joining us today, we have Todd Engdahl with Chalkbeat Colorado and Peter Marcus with the Durango Herald. Todd, a lot of concern about too many tests for students in K-12 schools and how best to address that. Talk about where we are and some of the politics going on here.
What's been a little bit surprising is that it's turned into a stalled issue. There's only been one hearing on one of nine testing-related bills.
And Peter, talk about some of the other factors and other people who have, you know, different ideas.
I think the fact that the bill to reduce student testing is stalled is an indication of just how politicized and complicated this issue is. Here you have folks from the far left, from the far right, meeting together to all agree that there's too much testing. And because of all of this noise that's circling around, it's really hard to move forward with any one proposal at this point, which is why they had to really put the main bill down. Sort of the first strike in the conversation was this bill that would allow parents to opt out of taking standardized tests for their kids without facing any repercussions or penalties from the schools. And so the question is whether or not they take all of these ideas and somehow wrap it into one compromise that can actually accomplish reducing testing in Colorado.
Is it just a question of some people want much, much fewer tests and others don't want to go as far? If that's the case, it seems like it wouldn't be too hard to find a middle ground.
Well, on the surface, you're right. It shouldn't be too hard. And I think part of the problem that's emerged is testing is so intertwined with all the other education reforms, ratings of districts and schools, teacher evaluations, new content standards for academic subjects. And part of the problem is if you start unraveling even part of that system, especially testing, the whole thing starts to threaten to come apart. And I think that's the concern, particularly of education reform advocates like Senator Johnston from Denver.
It sounds like it'll definitely be something that will play out in the final potentially few days of the session. Thanks. That was Todd Engdahl with Chalkbeat Colorado and Peter Marcus with the Durango Herald. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver, and you've been listening to Capital Conversation.
Stay tuned for Chase with the Tuesday Morning Music Mix. Thank you for your support during our Spring Pledge Drive. For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.